It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating. It's Thanksgiving week, and we have the family all together at the roundtable. Nobody's at the kiddie table this week. I'm Ben Ostro. We have Mark Schultz, Cam Philippe, Pat Weber, and Chris Soibert. So being that this Thanksgiving week, there's a lot of rivalries that sprout out in high school football. Of course, we have the Lions that always play at the NFL, and we always have a Cowboys game on the afternoon games, and then the night game that was added a few years ago as well. So, big football day. It's probably the one day that you get the most non-football fans other than the Super Bowl watching football. And so here we have, let's take it down to the high school level, and a lot of areas, it differs from, region to region, but, probably it's more to do with the cool weather up north. Up in the Northeast, you see a lot of rivalries up in Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, to some extent, New Jersey, where I grew up. Those rivalries were strong. And yeah, they played on Thanksgiving morning. Didn't matter if they were in the playoffs. They would play that game and then turn around and play a playoff game on the weekend in some cases, or sometimes the timing really threw things off. There's just nothing that beats a football game. The one that I really remember from when I lived up north was the one between Easton, Pennsylvania, and Phillipsburg, New Jersey, and that started in like 1905, and I believe it's the longest running or the oldest interstate high school rivalry for Thanksgiving games. But it's just fascinating that you have from two different states, you have teams playing each other, and it's all for pride. It has nothing to do with the standings or anything like that. It's all for pride. And then one gets bragging rights as they go over the free bridge every year. So there's all sorts of rivalries. I'm sure up in Massachusetts they're plentiful, given that that's also the birthplace of Thanksgiving. So we'll throw it up to Massachusetts, and that's where Camp Philippe is. And why don't you give us a little bit of sense of what high school football is up in Massachusetts.
Thanksgiving football in Massachusetts is one of the most storied in the entire country. But again, that may just be my local bias showing. So we have, I believe, over 20 public school rivalries that have been played on Thanksgiving that are over 100 years old. And for a small state, that's a great amount. I've been lucky enough to officiate on Thanksgiving every year of my officiating career. I'll be officiating this Thanksgiving again. It really is such a great tradition. The oldest public high school Thanksgiving rivalry is in Massachusetts. It's Wellesley and Needham, which started in 1882. And they've played every year except for 2020. But that is the oldest public high school rivalry that has been played on Thanksgiving. And the way that our playoffs work and how it's structured, at least modern day, the state semifinals were just played this past weekend, the weekend prior to Thanksgiving. And Thanksgiving is kind of the weekend between where those exhibition rivalry games are played. And then the following week is when the state championships are played. So those will be next week. And it's really interesting to see because you have these 80, 90, 100 plus year old rivalries that will always be playing on Thanksgiving Day. And sometimes those teams are lined up to be in the state championship. And, we've seen in the past, some teams may rest their starters for a portion of the game. Or there have been instances where teams choose not to play on Thanksgiving because they are going to a state championship. I remember when I was in high school, well, I shouldn't say that. I was younger. I was still in elementary school, actually, but it was my town's high school, the high school I did go to before I was old enough. The last time they made it to a state championship was 2010, and that year they opted not to play on Thanksgiving because they were trying to keep the players healthy for the state championship game that year. But, you know, it's for something more important than the standings. You may see in a lot of other places around the country, these really big rivalry games are, you know, in division or in conference, and they're being played in games that count. And, you know, they're critical for standings throughout the year and playoff seedings and, you know, the very important things that make the sport so great. But to be able to have, you know, Thanksgiving morning, a 10 o'clock kickoff, you got these teams that don't like each other. They've been around for hundreds of years in some cases, or 100 plus years, I should say. And, you know, they're always going to put their best effort forward, even though it doesn't really mean anything for playoff position or standings or anything like that. They're going to play just as hard because, you know, they hate that other team across the line from them. And, you know, they're going to make sure that they get their win on Thanksgiving. And for a lot of seniors, it's their swan song. So any team that didn't make a state championship, and we have 8 divisions in Massachusetts, so we only have 16 schools that are playing in state championship games. All those other schools, those seniors, that's their last game. That's their way out. So, you know, a lot of emotion on Thanksgiving morning, and it's always a great feeling. You know, you wake up early, try not to wake the family up. You grab your bag and you leave, and then you come back around 1 o'clock and, you know, everyone's getting ready to eat and you just enjoy the rest of your day. But it's a really good thing from an officiating standpoint in Massachusetts where, you know, getting together with your crew before the game to get breakfast or after the game, before you go home to eat with your family, is just as important of a tradition.
And that's quite interesting to have, you know, you have your high school routine, which is typically Friday nights, and, you know, and those atmospheres are electric as well with, you have a couple of games down towards the stretch and all that. But I have to imagine that, you know, you're getting a larger crowd at some of these games than maybe for a regular season game. You've got people that have been there for maybe, you know, haven't been in school for 50 years, but, you know, they don't know who's on the team, but they're rooting for, you know, for their alma mater from 50 years ago. And yeah, just to change that whole dynamic. And now we're now even not even just like in a on a Saturday, or we would have like a morning game if there were some scheduling issues. But no, this is like in the morning on Thanksgiving. So it's just a whole new atmosphere there. You know, I'm sure that up in Massachusetts, the frost is still even on the field before everybody goes out for warmups.
I just do want to add, because I looked it up really quickly and I just want to make sure I got it in there. The Thanksgiving game I'll be working this week is, you know, a town that's small town, but known probably across the country and maybe across the world, Foxborough. So Foxborough High, they're playing Mansfield High. They first played on Thanksgiving in 1894. And since 1945, they'd played every Thanksgiving. So, you know, I just wanted to just say story traditions, and didn't mean to interrupt there, but I didn't even know that. I wanted to look it up. Just, you know, it's got deep roots here.
That's really neat. In my high school years, I lived in Pennsylvania, and the Thanksgiving Day ball game was the last game of the regular season. Pennsylvania's regular season was 11 weeks long, gosh, 35 years ago now, and their playoffs, very few teams made the playoffs. They wrapped up their state championship by, I believe, the second weekend of December. So Thanksgiving morning, everybody played their final game of the regular season, and it is a very special atmosphere. It's a festive atmosphere. People are excited. Maybe some family has come in from out of town and they've come to the ball game. The game is being played in the morning. There's no lights on, and the sun is hitting at a very different angle than you have ever seen at a football game. And as John Facenda says on NFL Films, it's the cold November mud out there on the field. It's a very exciting and very fun atmosphere. As a high school official, I've never worked on Thanksgiving Day itself. In Illinois, the state championship weekend is Thanksgiving weekend. I worked a game on Friday after Thanksgiving. I can tell you I wasn't much company on Thanksgiving Day. My game face was already on, but it's very special, and you work during the daytime. But for an official, once the game kicks off, it is just another ball game. Your mechanics are the same. You blow your whistle the same. You call the same baseline fouls for holding. So it's a regular game once it kicks off, but you can't help but notice the festive atmosphere for a Thanksgiving Day ball game.
And that's the thing that when I say that, yeah, you have the crowd, it's really, you know, you probably feel it when you get out on the field and all those emotions that you and all the poetry that you bring up from NFL films is also apt here. Yeah, I feel like we're waxing on like John Madden about, you know, Thanksgiving and football, and, you know, we can start circling all these places on the map with the Telestrator and all that. But, that's the thing, is that when that game goes, yeah, you're in that moment, but, you know, as soon as toe hits ball, you know, you're officiating and being on your game right away. You mentioned Illinois doesn't do very much of this on Thanksgiving, but there is a tradition in Illinois, and Pat Weber has been a part of it.
Yeah, in addition to the playoffs, up in the Chicago area, we have the Chicago Prep Bowl. At one time, it was arguably the biggest high school game in the country. In the 30s, they actually had over 100,000 people pack Soldier Field to watch the final. High school football in Illinois did not have state playoffs until the mid-70s. And until that point, it was always the champion of the Chicago Public League and the Chicago Catholic League would play each other in this game. And it was always a big, big deal. Massive game, saw legends on the field, such as like Dick Butkus, players like that. Anybody who came out of Chicago, including the officials. I believe Jerry Markbright was on the field for a game in his early officiating career before he became arguably one of the best NFL referees of all time. As the state moved into having state playoffs, the game has lost its luster a little bit over the years, but it's still a very big game to the teams that play in it. And as you said, Ben, I was fortunate last year to be the referee for the game. My dad was also on my crew, so that made it a little extra special. And there's nothing else like working Thanksgiving week in football or working even late in the season, because anytime we're working this late in the year, that means it's been a good year.
I don't know if you could pack in any more football metaphors into that. It's Soldier Field and Thanksgiving and, you know, as you said, working with your dad, and then to have a connection, to have worked essentially the same game in different years as Jerry Markbright. I mean, you know, polish the star on that one. That is an amazing connection to have that, you know, in your repertoire there. So I was fascinated when I heard about that before we started work recording. And yeah, I'm happy to know you, and I will brag about that going forward. But that's a really cool tradition, and as you say, it's one of the larger ones in the United States. And yeah, unfortunately, it has lost its luster. Same thing kind of happened in the same city with the All-Star game that they used to have between the college All-Stars and the Super Bowl champion, and that kind of ended in the 70s there as well. But yeah, it's just adding all of those things, and yeah, to be able to work on the same field as your dad on Thanksgiving weekend, I mean, how much greater does it get than that?
Yeah, it was really fun, really special. We found out we were getting the assignment at our association social, and Tony Mihalik was actually kind of walking me through the whole history of this game, and, you know, how fortunate we were to be sharing that kind of history with former greats, whether they be players or officials. And it really is special to be part of that history, even if the game isn't quite what it was back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. But that history doesn't go away.
And when I had floated this topic recorded earlier today, I know that Chris Seubert was sitting there responding in our instant messages, and he's like, wait a minute, we're playing games that don't count? What's going on here? What is all this? So, you know, give me a little bit of a sense of what you absorbed today as we were kind of discussing some of these Thanksgiving traditions.
I was completely floored by this for a variety of reasons. I mean, Cam went into the history of multiple years of all these rivalries. And in Michigan, we're kind of the same as Illinois when it comes to playoffs. Our Thanksgiving weekend is when our finals are. And obviously, it's not on Thanksgiving Day. And I have to imagine a little bit of this is probably because the Lions have had such a mainstay on Thanksgiving, where Michigan is so into the Lions, for better or worse, that our Thanksgiving days are planned around watching a Lions game. And whether it's, you know, nobody wants to typically eat during the game, so you're either going to eat early, because a lot of times it's the early game of the day, so you're either eating breakfast for, you know, Thanksgiving, or you're going to eat after. So I think scheduling high school football games on a Lions football day would be sacrilegious in the state of Michigan. And that's, I have to imagine that's likely part of the reason why we don't have it, because, you know, we are a pretty proud state when it comes to high school football, just like other states are. And I would love, I mean, after we finish our playoffs, I don't know about you guys, but if you don't end up making it to whether it's a semifinal or a final, it's kind of a dull feeling when your season ends a little bit, because it's like, oh, we just had our, you know, first round of playoffs, getting ready to go, and then it's over. And I think having that Thanksgiving game would be an outstanding way to end a season for a crew, especially with the sort of the hype around a rivalry game that would be. And most of our rivalry games are on the last week of the regular season, where it actually, again, it counts toward the standings, which is why I was shocked that we played these games otherwise. But again, to send off your crew in that way, like you said, Cam, where you go have breakfast, you go to the game, and, or, you know, if you don't have, maybe someone doesn't have any family to be with, your crewmates could come over and have dinner with you. That would just be an outstanding way to end a season.
And one other thing I want to tie into the NFL tradition. I mean, yes, of course, we know about, you know, the Lions and their long history. And, you know, the Packers seem to get in there quite often. And I'm sure that they're, you know, every time the schedule comes out, they're, the first thing that they're doing is, are we going to have to play the Lions on Thanksgiving? I just want to switch us over to our partner site, Quirky Research, and we have like a list of games that were rescheduled and postponed. There was actually one year where FDR had changed the date of Thanksgiving, and so the games that the NFL originally had scheduled for Thanksgiving Day suddenly were not on there. But at that time, there was a game that was postponed due to rain. Yes, back then, they postponed games due to rain. If you don't get a lot of people in the seats, you don't sell a lot of tickets. And before TV, that's where they made the money. So if there was a rain out, there was a rain out. It's hard to believe it nowadays that they would postpone a game due to rain. But they wound up scheduling it on that rescheduled Thanksgiving Day. So we'll have on the episode page the link to the Quirky Research page with all the details on that. So that was like an interesting little nugget as to, you know, we always have Lions and Cowboys, but, you know, at the early stages of the NFL, things were move around quite a bit like that. So speaking of the NFL, we do have one instance that does come to the forefront every year, and we run our public service announcement every year in favor of referee Phil Luckett. We've seen the replay. I don't know if I should rehash it all the time, but what viewers saw at home was that Phil Luckett didn't hear Jerome Bettis call the coin toss and took the wrong option. Luckett said that Bettis said heads and Bettis said tails. And of course, everybody heard tails on the broadcast, and he was just absolutely pilloried. So, Mark, I'll let you go through some of the history from what happened there, because it wasn't exactly the way we heard it on TV.
It was not. And back then, the rules were that the captain called the toss while the coin was in the air. So you flip it, the captain made heads or tails as the coin was sailing in the air, then it landed and we got our result. That's exactly what happened with that coin toss with Jerome Bettis and Phil Luckett. And there was such a he said situation, that they actually went through and did some audio washing of the coin toss, and Bettis actually said head, tail. So Luckett said in his mind, and he said later, Bettis said heads, tails, and Luckett says, I take your first choice, which is heads. The coin landed tails. Detroit won the toss, sudden death overtime, marched it down, kicked a field goal, walked it off. And so then Luckett was pretty much exonerated. He followed the rules that day. And everybody, all the talking heads, have snarked on him since 1998. I think our public service announcements have helped over the years settle things down a little bit for Phil Luckett. But boy, for a year or two, he was persona non grata as far as NFL officials go. But he was right.
And Cam, I know that we have looked at his situation, and publicly they didn't report Luckett, but behind the scenes they did. And I think they kind of reached more of an interesting compromise where they didn't publicly admit one of the star players was wrong, but also gave Luckett a little bit of a pass.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And Mike Pereira has said in an interview since that he wished, as a department, he was the head of officials at the time, that if he could go back and do it differently, that he would have wanted to defend Phil Luckett more fiercely than they did. They kind of just let it be and didn't acknowledge it one way or another. There was an NFL Films Presents segment. It's probably close to, I think it was around the 10-year anniversary of that. So it probably was around 2008. And Phil Luckett was interviewed, and, you know, he talked about this where, you know, he said, just like Mark said, the captain's first choice is irrevocable. And Mike Pereira had said, you know, I wish we had defended him more fiercely. And it kind of led to a string of controversies that closed out that season for his crew, not necessarily him, but for his crew. And some of them unwarranted, most of them unwarranted, but definitely the coin toss is something. It gets replayed on one of the broadcasts every year, or it's mentioned, and it's something that he'll always have to live with. I was happy to meet him in 2022 at the Gold Jacket dinner for Art McNally's enshrinement, and nice man. But I know that he knows that's something he's going to have to live with forever. Luckily, hopefully he knows. I know he knows deep down, just like we do here. He was right.
And that's one of the things that, yeah, again, it's probably the one call that is most misunderstood. I'm really trying to find a parallel. Maybe you go to the Tuck rule, but even at that, again, that was another correctly called situation. And it was just the way it was presented. And I think the two common elements there were, for the Tuck rule, you have Walt Coleman, who was at an economy of words when he was on the PA system and didn't really explain what this little esoteric rule was. And in Phil Luckett's case, he really needed to go on the microphone and explain to the audience, to the crowd and to the audience on TV, what he heard and why he ruled it that way. I don't think that Bettis really did anything for his case. In fact, he really solidified the case against Phil Luckett. It's hard to hear. We have a video on our site and we subtitled it. And his defense was that, as you said, Mark, that he said, ha, tails. And so Bettis is saying to his coach, Bill Cowher, he says, I said, huh. Well, that if that's your defense for trying to do this weird kind of, oh, I'm going to choose it one way or the other. It kind of backs up Luckett in his decision. And it really wouldn't have been fair for him to reflip the coin because he had a valid choice as he had heard it. You don't just try and switch it up like that. He heard enough of heads to indicate heads. And so, unfortunately, he bears the burden every year, and we're going to do whatever we can, devoting digital ink and bringing it to your ears every year as we dispel the rumor more and more. So on behalf of the Football Zebras crew, I'd like to wish everyone that has listened to us a happy Thanksgiving, safe travels, hope And we will see you right here on the First and 25 podcast.